Welcome to Dread, Fright, and Brew, where your favorite horror movies are paired with craft brews and ciders from the Pacific Northwest and beyond. Your hosts this evening are Aaron Hatfield, Grace Schrick, and Lee Despain. Fear goes better with beer.
So they dig him up and take his body, you know, elsewhere where they're going to burn it. And they light him on fire, and his corpse...
Motherfucker stands up.
Like, yeah, sits up on the funeral pyre. So, yeah, I don't know. Awesome, awesome mythos of...
And, of course, that's just been taken into all kinds of things now, from Hellboy and the mysticism of Rasputin and the Nazis seeking all that stuff. Even what the movie Anastasia plays on the mystical dark magics of Rasputin.
Yeah, also a great place where I used to buy records in the Bay Area. Rasputin's music was like our big go-to for used and traded music. Yeah, that's Rasputin's cool. Was something worth like a day trip to for a long time.
Well, shit, we should get this show on the road then.
Yeah, we totally should. But anyway, some of those are the reasons why... Why we thought old Rasputin's.
Do we need one more glass that's non-soded?
Oh, no, I'm good. I'm good with this one right here.
Okay.
But, yeah, let's get this party started. We're back. It's episode 2. And tonight we are doing The Void from 2016.
Yeah, another movie I haven't seen. So, that was really cool.
You were supposed to watch it beforehand?
Well, I mean, I did.
You have now.
Okay. I have
but
now.
You hadn't then. Okay.
Yeah.
Makes sense. Good. I was like, I wish you'd watch the movie before we talked about it.
Jeez, Lee.
But awesome. Awesome. Awesome movie. One of my favorites of this year. I think it was made last year, but this year I think is when it kind of got a better release and when it hit Netflix and DVD, Blu-ray, all that kind of fun stuff. But definitely one of my favorites.
Well, I got some drinkables here for us.
We'll get them out. So what are we passing around?
So we are passing around, interestingly enough, a beer called Old Rasputin. It's a Russian Imperial Stout. And I got to tell you, man, if you have never had any kind of Imperial Stout, you have to make this one your first one. It's something fantastic going on with this company.
Which is North Coast. They are... Oddly enough, on the north coast of California.
I've got... Well, I like special mugs.
Oh, it's too bad. It's too bad you guys can't all see this. No, that's Bacchus.
Bacchus, yes. Oh. A Roman god of fertility and the drink.
So Leah's pulled out a large ceramic mug shaped and painted as the head...
very creepy man's head.
...of
that I'm about
Bacchus.
To
This mug is near and dear to me, actually, because Aaron, you actually got this for me for Christmas a year or so ago.
Yes, I do remember that.
Yeah,
actually.
I like my mugs. I have a few special ones. Most of my mugs tell a little bit of a story or have a real fond memory. So,
are you gonna drink from a different special mug every podcast we do?
Ooh, I should.
Because we should make that part of our thing.
I should. That'd be cool. I
can bring you a sip.
We should do that.
My very first sippy cup when I was, 1 year old, my mom put rum in it. And
it was a Bacchus?
It was Bacchus.
Yeah.
No.
That would explain so much.
It really does.
So while we're talking about things we might want to do in this here podcast, we're on episode 2. Tonight, as you guys can tell, we are pairing North Coast's Old Rasputin, tagline never say die, with 2016's The Void. But last week, we did one of these favorite podcasts, and we kind of neglected a significant part.
Yeah, we kind of did, didn't we?
Yeah, we didn't really introduce ourselves or talk about who we are. And while that might not be important to everybody, we should probably get that done this time, I think.
Welcome to Dread, Fright, and Brew.
Yes, yes. Welcome, everybody. Welcome us, since apparently this is the first time we've thought about the fact that we're actually doing this.
We should struggle.
Talk about it. I'm Aaron. And I first started writing horror reviews for online websites back in 2002. I've written somewhere around 600 or 700 of those. in that time. I collect horror movies. I have about 1,200 horror movies here in the room that we're sitting in currently. And it's a big part of my life. It's a big passion of my life. And it has always kind of been shared by, well, I don't want to say always, but for the last several years anyways, it's been shared by my passion for beer and visiting breweries and all of that. So this seemed like kind of a no-brainer for me. And when I wanted to get back into writing horror reviews, I was afraid that no one really wanted to read as much anymore. And so we should do this podcast thing that all the kids are talking about.
Brilliant idea, man.
Something like that.
I thought it was cool when man first invented the wheel. And I was around to see that. But this?
Yeah.
This is very cool. I'm Lee, by the way. I'm the immortal one. The one that most people would say is old.
You're our elder statesman. That's how I would put it.
Yes.
That sounds so fancy.
An artist by nature and trade, I guess. Not so much trade as nature, but that's my big passion. Always been interested in the sci-fi, the fantasy, the horror, the unspeakables, the creatures. So got a super passion for that. And beer, of course. I've been home brewing since, 1986, I think, 87.
Yeah. You had to wait for electricity before you could really get going.
Yeah, because grinding those grains by hand, that blows.
All right. Well, I'm Grace. I'm not quite as hardcore into horror or artistic as the other two, but I love horror movies. My main passion is definitely the beer. I'm a beer buyer and a beer tender, bartender person. And I homebrew, and beer's kind of my life. So I was super stoked when Aaron came up with an idea of, hey, let's watch horror movies and pair beers.
Yeah.
Like, I can do that. I like those things.
Well, I've had worse ideas.
Yeah, no.
I can vouch for that. He's had a lot of them.
You have.
Yeah, that's right. But I have gone after every one of them wholeheartedly.
Yes.
It just seemed like a niche that a lot of people are into. I mean, there's breweries that have, a horror movie night, things like that. We haven't found the one that's going to host our horror movie night yet, but we're always looking. I've seen horror kind of themed beers come out of breweries before. We've even seen a horror themed brewery, like with Phantom Carriage down in California, which was really like my Shangri-La when I went down there. That was amazing. I'll hopefully be down there in about a month and a half again.
I would love to see that. I'm see if I can make that happen, totally encroach on you guys. And
totally. I think you should. The more the merrier when it comes to Halloween festivities. But I just kind of figured, why not? Why not marry them together, not only on the same podcast, but have that be the reason for the podcast, is give people an evening that they could hunt out and put together themselves. They could grab that movie, grab that beer, and sit and do exactly what we're doing. Take in a horror film and drink some awesome beer and think about how they go together.
Oh, yeah. It takes a creative side to it, a whole different level. I mean, fuck, I've been, a buddy of mine would rent the whole, back in the day when you had video stores and you would go and rent a VHS video instead of downloading it. That was a big thing. It was an event. You go out, you get a video, you didn't know anything about it. You didn't have reviews. You couldn't get online and find out what it was. You just basically picked it based on really cool cover art or the slight description that they put on the back. You got home, turned out to be the most horrible B-rated thing you ever experienced. So then you ended up making fun of it while you were watching it. Every now and then you'd find a real gem and a real treasure. And of course, we'd always bring beer with it. But it never developed into something quite as cool as this before. So, man, when you popped that idea out, I was like on board instantly.
To go back to what you were saying about when you rented a movie and you'd get it home and it was B-rated and horrible and, the acting was terrible and the effects were so cheesy. And I'm almost wondering if that isn't why I now remember all those kinds of movies so fondly. And now when I watch, a Killer Clowns, or something like that, that has a high level of cheesy fun to it. I'm wondering if it was because back then you kind of felt like you had to like it because you used your whole, allowance to go and rent this movie, hopefully with someone of age enough to let you get it rented. took it to whoever's house had the parents that were cool with such things. And, you know, you watched it and you didn't watch it once. You watched it once, twice, three times sometime because, you know, you've only got it for 24 hours. And it's got to go back to the shop.
No, that's a total good point because you don't. You have instant gratification nowadays, and you don't have to commit to anything.
Yeah.
Well, let's pop something on Netflix. It blows ass first 5 minutes. Let's find something else. No, you did. You spent all your day traveling to people's houses, knocking on the doors. Hey, you got any bottles that I can get in return for you? You know, you gathered up your 5 cent deposits all day.
Is that how you got into beer also? Is the dregs out of the bottom of those bottles?
I can borrow?
No.
You're like, hey, I want to move some beer.
I can't talk about that on this station.
Okay, not this episode. Oh. We'll save that special episode coming soon.
There was other things that we had to do to get beer.
Well, yeah, that's a little bit about us. That's what we're here to do with you guys. I mean, we touched on it last week, and you know, hopefully this is something that works out for everybody in the long run. But tonight we're going to talk about The Void, and I couldn't be happier because this is exactly a throwback to what we were just talking about. This is a throwback mm-hmm. to walking the aisles, finding a good cover, getting mm-hmm. home, and then having one of the movies actually be a payoff and go, we found a good one. This one's awesome. And this has all of those things. It has the super over-the-top practical effects that have been missing in so many low-budget horror films because it's so much easier now just to whip together some CG blood or CG effects.
That was the worst thing that could ever happen to any kind of movie is when they got away from squibs and they started doing digital blood bullet explosions and
absolutely
all that stuff. It's terrible.
I was watching an interview actually with the writer and directors, Jeremy Gillespie and Stephen Kostansky, I think it is, that wrote and directed together The Void, and someone asked them kind of oddly, you know, why was it important for you guys to make the choice to do practical effects? You know, why not digital effects? And his response was perfection. And he simply said, well, the CG effects don't work.
Yeah.
And I think that's it in a nutshell. They don't.
They're not tangible. You can't reach in and feel like you can touch them. You don't feel depth and weight and volume. You just, you know, it's shallow.
You can't digitally splash blood in someone's face and have them react to it, but you can pop a bladder full of stage blood in someone's face and they're going to react to that hitting them in the face in a certain way. And you're going to get really natural looking effects that like you say, go seamlessly into the film so much more than when you try to computer generate them seamlessly into a film, which
much like the fucking effect I had by drinking this Rasputin just now. That was in my face, in my mouth, and just incredible.
Yeah, we should have a sip of this. I've been sitting here smelling it, but I haven't.
Yeah, sorry, I couldn't wait.
I've been drinking.
I had to drink from the head of Bacchus. I'm sorry.
Oh, man. Yeah, that is good.
It's too cold.
True. It does need to warm up about, what, 60 degrees, 65 degrees, something like that?
I see. Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah, it probably should.
But
it probably should. But
remember, this was produced in the traditional sort of method back in the, you know, 18th
very
century.
True. I can't vibe on warm beers. It doesn't have to be warm, but you know, room temp. No.
That's where you get all the good aromas and the flavors
I understand.
Open up.
I understand this is where me and beer as a science part ways, but
Aaron and I have argued to the death on this point.
Oh, yes.
On many, many occasions.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm probably the
as
same
I
way.
As I creepily cradle my beer everywhere.
That is true. Warm She's warming it right now.
Yeah, no, I'll take a warmer beer and a cask-conditioned beer over anything. So I think that's what's kind of cool here. We all got our different preferences here. And
for
we're
sure.
going to be able to talk relatively intelligently about them until
until Lee has to talk about hops, and then he thinks everything's yucky.
Hops have their place, but
you know. And speaking of, this has a decent bitterness to it,
mm-hmm.
more than I would have thought from just the nose.
Yeah, Russian Imperial Stouts are usually one of the more bitter styles of stouts. They're aggressive. They're big and beasty and chewy. They're not going to be some smooth, chocolate, creamy stout. They're
no, although it certainly does have some of those elements to it.
Yeah,
but you can feel the complexity, taste the complexity. Like back of the throat right now, incredible amount of bitterness going on.
But it's not overly astringent.
No, uh-uh. What I love about this this bottle, actually, I have quite a bit of experiences with Old Rasputin, but not himself, but the beer.
I'm not. I wasn't taking anything for granted. I was like, all right, well, tell us how he was.
But I do love this bottle because of the artwork on the front. It has some really cool drawings of Rasputin doing some sort of blessing, which, you know, just the fact of enjoying a beer, brewing a beer, we often joke about the blessing of being able to enjoy this incredible craft. And it has something, to me, it has some saying, although it's really weird to have this saying around Rasputin himself, but I guess it fits what his goal was with the Russian royalties. But around it, it has, encircling it, a phrase that is, a sincere friend is not born instantly, and how hard it is to make and keep good friends, which is written around it in Russian to some extent. And I believe that in a long time. I believe that you don't... Friendship is one of those things that are... should be really coveted, because you don't get to choose who your parents are. You don't get to choose who your brother and sister are, or even who you fall in love with. But you do get to choose who you're going to allow into your life and call friend. And that's a thing that I've sort of held personal for decades. So the fact that I'm sitting with you motherfuckers, you know.
Yeah. Well,
clearly. Shows your poor judgment. Show,
poor judgment.
Well, not that, but has either one of us actually said, you know, hey, friend.
I think friend. He is my friend, yeah.
All right.
What else is in that
mug? I guess we're stuck now.
Oh, it's the head of Bacchus. Sorry, guys.
Yeah. Well, this beer's been around for a while. I mean, North Coast started in 88. They made a very interesting decision, which was to remain isolated. So as they got bigger and bigger, they never moved from Fort Bragg, California, which is just not too far from Mendocino up on the north coast of California. Yep. But it's not necessarily a hub for anything. I mean, it's kind of in the middle of nowhere out there. And they are on a freeway, which made distribution, I guess, not too big of a problem. But as far as gaining exposure or having people come out there or first, you know, garnering those distribution deals, they didn't do themselves any favor by just staying out there. But it was something they wanted to do. They said, we don't want to open, you know, a new joint in urban areas just to pull in the business. You know, people will come and people will find our beer. And it has totally worked for them. I think they actually have four or five different locations in Fort Bragg because they've needed to expand from the size of their building. But they have had to go to other buildings to...
Well, and that doesn't hurt distribution at all. This is a beer that you can get anywhere.
Yeah.
And they've been producing this particular one, Old Rasputin, since, what do you say, 1980?
Well, 95. 95 was when Old Rasputin came around.
I remember my very first experience with it because even though we were homebrewing, we were still... I mean, we were doing the hops thing back then. That's why I'm so, like, over it now. Mm-hmm. And more into the malts and all that stuff. That's exactly why.
Been there, done that with the hops. That. Yeah, they're a flash in the pan, those hops.
Back into day.
But me and a buddy of mine were at a burger pub called Claudia's. And they had this really cool window that you'd walk into the main entrance and then you'd split off to two directions, one direction to the pool house, one direction to the actual pub part of it. And then there's this window that you would walk in and see. And this window had just bottle after bottle after bottle of nothing that you could find in any of the grocery stores anywhere. It was almost like it's the first draft of a bottle shop, of a bottle okay. house. And we thought, oh, wow, look at all these cool beers from all over the world. There was Old Rasputin. There was one called Old Nick, which we should really dig up again because, goddamn, that was a kick in the shorts. And we asked them about, you know, what are these bottles here? And, oh, yeah, we sell these. Opened up first Old Rasputin. Good Lord. It absolutely changed me at that point to what I liked because we were drinking still at that time your lighter ales and lagers and still probably fucking around with PBR and shit like that. So
is this your coming of age story?
It kind of is. It really kind of was.
And then you follow the tracks and you found a dead body. Chopper stick balls. Yeah. Yeah.
Shit.
Saw the movie about this.
And I have quite a few different stories about that when Beard has done that for me and it's like, wow, this is something new, this is something incredible. And because it is the arts and science of beer, you can create so many different things. You don't just follow a recipe. You put your heart and soul into it. And this sort of hit me like, holy shit, this is something I've never experienced before.
Totally. No, I really actually appreciate that. And I don't have the same history with beer that goes that far back. For me, beer is more of a last 5-6 years thing. And I mean, I've put in my time. I've been to almost 250 breweries since then and just past 4,000 unique beers in my explorations and things. So, I mean, it's something I've grown a passion for real fast, but
you're a sprinter,
but it's
caught up quick, man.
Well, I don't do anything halfway, really. That's not my personality, but, horror movies for me was that way where I got into it and it, like you said, it made a difference and it kind of changed you and it kind of forged who you were. So I'm glad that we have histories in the things that we're going to talk about that go back that far. It's just going to be fun and exciting to see the stories that come out of us as this goes on.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No kidding. There was a music venue called, what was it called? Plan B here in town. It's a music venue. It's a pub. It's a music venue where anybody can come in and book time to do their thing, to do their show. And the same buddy, he owns a coffee shop and he has some employees who put together this random sort of, fuck, I don't know what they'd call them, a Grateful Dead band, but they were sort of punk, but they didn't rehearse. They just got together and tried to make music. And she invited us out one night to go check out the band and we listened to them and it was pretty much what you think it would be. But we were in the back hanging out, and she got done with her set, and she came out, and she said, oh, guys, great, I'm glad you made it, and we were chit-chatting a little bit, and she goes, oh, I see you're hanging out at the Rasputin room, and right next to us was this little alcove, and it had a little wraparound couch in it, and this alcove was no more than like a small walk-in closet, and it had photographs, old photographs of this, you know, sort of priestly bearded guy, and candles everywhere. It was really like a shrine. Huh. And she's like, yeah, this is so cool, man. Rasputin room and all the mysticism. We hang out here all the time. We love this room and it's really great. And we're looking at her. We're like, are you fucking kidding me? That's fucking Charlie Manson. That's not fucking Rasputin, you sick fucks. You're worshiping some fucking, you know, mass murderer.
Hey, Charlie didn't kill anybody.
Semantics. And then we're just like, oh, kids nowadays.
That's really, really funny.
Yeah, true story, man. I can't make that shit up.
So they just didn't know
who. They had no clue. They thought it was Rasputin.
Oh, my God. You said bearded and, you know, robed figure, and I immediately thought Obi-Wan Kenobi, so. Could have been anybody, really.
Could have been.
Obi-Wan yeah. room. Grace, how's your beer doing? Is it warming up?
It's getting there. It's smelling delicious now.
Tell us about this beer.
This beer makes me happy because it's very classic in style, but it's done by a brewery in Cali. It's basically done in the tradition of like 18th century English brewers who supplied the court of Russia's Catherine the Great with beer. And this was the style that they brewed. So it's very much a historical beer. It is one of those beers that is a meal, essentially.
Yeah, there's so much. Yeah.
It's so complex and so rich. Like, it's viscous and heavy and thick.
I'm over here but happy mealing the fuck out of it right now.
It's not over the top. Like, it's roasty. You get kind of almost this, like, chicory bitterness. But it's super smooth at the same time. You get that lingering bitter flavor, but it's not harsh and just, you know, a coffee bomb, like a lot of the Imperial Stouts kind of totally. Gone in that track. This one's balanced, but, you know, and it's one of those beers. I love it because it's simple in the sense that it's kind of this very classic clean style. You get those roasted malts, but it doesn't have a bunch of added shit.
Not at all, though.
Yeah.
So it's just good, beasty dark beer.
Yeah, not at all something people should be afraid of. Like people that like the lighter beers or that they haven't dove into something like this.
Yeah.
This is incredible, you know, sort of segue, I think, for...
It's fairly approachable. I mean, it's got some bitterness to it, but it's also super sneaky. It does not taste like it's 9%. So it'll hit you like a ton of bricks. But it's delicious. And it's something that you can sip on it. And, you know, it's one of those beers that you should pour it when it's cold. Smell it. Taste it. Let it warm up. Let it develop. Because this is one of those beers that's perfect for that. Because the flavor profile and the aromas completely open up and change as it warms up.
Yeah.
For those of you that don't like warm beer, sorry.
I'm getting a lot of, like, chocolate and...
But yeah, it's chocolatey, it's roasty, you almost get that kind of coffee note. But it doesn't, as far as I know, it doesn't have coffee added to it. It's just kind of that roasted bitterness. Just
from the malts.
I think it's just the malts, mainly.
Yeah, it's big. I mean, it has a huge flavor profile.
And it's almost got that kind of, like, campfire-y, almost smokiness to it. Which kind of makes me think of, like, that chicory flavor.
Okay. Well, this beer won a gold medal at the World Beer Championships eight times.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's won at least a dozen or so gold medals across in U.S. and
Global awards. Yeah, it looks like 16 gold.
Yeah, wow. It's nuts.
I tried looking into it to see if they've changed the recipe at all, to see if the one that we're having now is the one that's always been made, but it doesn't appear that they have. It looks like they just...
If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah, struck gold and...
Well, like Rasputin himself, it just doesn't die.
It just doesn't die. Well, and I love that, actually, on the bottle that we're looking at, in quotes down below his profile, is never say die. Mm. And I had had old Rasputin.
Did you just say he was a goonie?
That's awesome.
And I thought that was so cool, but I remember on the little bottles I used to drink out of the four packs, it didn't ever... have that on the bottles, but I guess it's actually on the four pack itself. It's also that tagline, never say die. Mm. And I thought that was another really cool tie in to the Void and where the story of the Void.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Ultimately winds up going.
Talk about that quite a bit.
They certainly do. That is a theme for sure. So another thing I thought was really awesome about this when I was kind of reading up on both North Coast and Old Rasputin is this came out and, what's his name? Rudrick, I believe, is the name of the co-founder.
Mark Rudrick.
Yeah, and he's now president, I guess, of it, something like that. Well, when this first came out, the cost to make this was so high, they said, we're not going to be able to sell a six-pack of this. No one will pay that much money. So let's put it in four packs, which nowadays we know is a thing. But in 1995, distributors went, no, that's not going to happen. No one's going to pay money for less beer. And I guess his fight... from reading some interviews and stuff with him, with the distributors, I mean, it was tooth and nail, drag out, almost cost relationships, almost cost some distribution for him to be able to put this into four packs. And now four packs are like the thing.
Sure.
You know, you see a beer now in a four pack and you immediately think, at least I do, this beer's got something that makes it a little more expensive. It has better ingredients, or it has more or varied or unique ingredients, or something that I'm paying for. So it almost sells quality now, and it's cool to know that got off the ground with a beer like this, and you know, maybe some other guys that were pushing forward around the same time.
But Guinness, for instance, and still to this day, I just four pack. I remember seeing Guinness in four packs for just years and years, and I always wondered why the fuck are they only doing four beers.
Because Guinness does what they want.
Yes, they do.
Oh, yes.
And they can.
We're talking Guinness around quite possibly the biggest Guinness fan I've ever come across. Grace over here.
Rumor has it that Grace bathes in Guinness beer at least once a week to maintain her.
That would waste too much beer. Huh.
Well, you drink it afterwards.
I take it in the shower with me. No, you don't. I don't bathe it. I'm not saying I wouldn't bathe in it, but it makes a fantastic shower beer.
Nothing wrong with a shower beer.
Oh, yeah. And I want to thank you guys, too, for introducing me to a shower beer.
I can't believe you have a shower beer.
Look, man. Back in the day, we were about brewing craft beer. We weren't about these gimmicks, you young kids and your moving pictures.
That was the second time he has said back in the day.
I know. I'm going to try to control that.
So,
and you told me not to make fun of you because you're ancient too much.
I'm immortal. There's a difference.
Immortal, that's right. Elder statesman. We're just going to keep telling ourselves that.
It's not a gimmick.
All right, let's dive into the void.
Yes.
So we've talked a little bit about the practical effects already, but I found the impetus of this movie and where the guys came from that made this movie to be really interesting with Astron 6.
Yes. Astron 6. Everybody know what that is? Anybody?
Go on. Tell us more.
According to these guys, it is in Tolkien lore, it's the day of the Elvish New Year.
Yes.
I don't know if that's true or not.
For a second, it kind of sounds but cool. But I think speaks to their sense of humor for sure, if nothing else.
But it's basically Astron 6 is the brainchild of five sort of multimedia artists who shared a fascination with the mechanics of fear, laughter, horror, practical effects. And they basically just sort of put this together. They created this film collective, which is started out in Winnipeg, if I'm not mistaken.
Somewhere in Canada, yeah.
And they kind of subvert everybody's expectations, sort of what the seasoned viewer is expecting, and just kind of throws nightmarishness and absurdity into it.
As I understand it, they are pretty much Canada's representation of Troma Studios.
Yeah.
Just right. That over the top, super gory, no holds barred, you know, put anything on screen, why not? Very funny, usually. Kind of slapstick and absurd. And that at least these two members thought, hey, what if we got a little serious? You know, what if we tried to make a horror movie that... And I don't want to say those movies aren't quality, but they're a different species.
Yeah.
When you're making a movie to emulate, you know, a terrible movie... That's a form of movie making all of its own. And I think they kind of thought, well, what if we made a horror film that harkens back to what we were talking about earlier, to those gold finds, those things that you found in that aisle at the video store that were beyond that and were something more than that.
Yeah, because I mean their first films as the collective of Ashton Six was a film called Manborg and Father's Day, I think it was.
Yeah.
And they were really funny, low-budget sort of genres of action cheese and a lot of gore horror. But with this one here, these two guys, they decided to grab a real serious spin on the installment and say, man, let's bring in some really solid elements of past genres that people, you know, that has defined the horror industry.
Totally. This movie picks up pieces from some of my all-time favorite films and then reassembles all those pieces into kind of like a super homage. The Thing, John Carpenter's. Well, it's obvious that these guys studied John Carpenter pretty severely because The Thing, Prince of Darkness,
mm-hmm.
Assault on Precinct 13,
yeah.
All of those are in Hellraiser. Not that that's a John Carpenter, but Hellraiser weighs heavily on this movie. They basically said, what if you took one of those classic Carpenter movies and put it in a Lovecraftian cosmos?
They get you kind of at first I thought it was a little muddled, but I was distracted and I ended up watching it again and thoroughly dug it because it has this really sort of sci-fi mystical horror hybrid element to it that covers all of those things that you said. Mm-hmm. And just on a side note or not, anybody that watches this, it's filmed really dark. I found that the second time I watched it, I turned the brightness up. I was able to see the details and appreciate the practical effects far better. So that's it. I'd recommend people do that. Turn the brightness up, especially towards the tail end of the movie. You really get a sense of what they're trying to do.
Some of that darkness, I wouldn't even be surprised if they crafted in, because it kind of felt like they were doing that thing again that Carpenter did so well, which was showing you something by not putting it on screen.
Yeah.
So, you know, John Carpenter, especially in like a Halloween movie, let's say, the device he used of showing an empty hallway and then an empty room and then an empty staircase, basically showing you these are all the places where the danger could be, but oh, look, it's not. I wonder where it is. So it builds that dread, builds that
what's
suspension.
Lurking in the shadows kind of
fear. Well, and in this in this particular case, absolutely, I agree with you 100%. there's some subtle details where some corpses are doing some very bizarre things that you don't see, or that I didn't see, at least on when I first watched it, because of the darkness of it. And when I turned it up the second time around, I was like, holy fuck, that thing just turned and looked at him. And I was like, didn't catch that the first time. So, you know, little things like that. But
I watched it yesterday for, I think, my third time now. And I found at least three scenes that I paused and turned and went, whoa, look at that. I never noticed that before. I didn't see that before. So it is something that also begs.
Like that one fucking corpse is just pounding its head into a piece of rebar.
Yeah.
It's just pump, 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 and turns around. And it's got this big hole right through it, and it's looking at him.
So I think we have to take a pause in our action here because it is time once again. It is that time for Deanne's
Dose of Reality. This is fantastic.
If you guys listen to episode one, you'll know that my lady Deanne likes to come over and have a smell of the beer that we are having and will give us some feedback on what she thinks of the aroma. And then she's going to have a taste and give us some feedback on what she thinks of the taste. And these feedbacks are usually a little too spot on for us, oftentimes changing the way I see a beer or smell a beer because then I can't shake what she's just told me. But let's see where this goes.
Well, I'm not into beers the way you guys are. But if someone were to hand this to me and say, smell, tell me what you think, and say, oh, that's Guinness.
Okay.
Oh. Right?
What is...
But it also smells like it has a hard alcohol, like a rum in it or something.
Oh, it's boozy.
It's very boozy. Or a bourbon, maybe.
Okay. This particular one is not barrel-aged, but is going to be assembled probably in quite the same way that a lot of stouts that do wind up barrel-aged.
Yeah, it reminds me of some sort of Christmas bourbon drink.
A Christmas bourbon drink. Well, there you have it. Yeah. You know, that wasn't that bad. You weren't that harsh on this one. Is this a beer that you would drink?
I guess I might. Weird.
Whoa, it's only episode two. We found a beer that she would drink. I feel like that was too easy.
Well, are there any hops in it?
Yes. Well, yes. There's hops in just about every beer. It's just how they're used.
It's a requirement for being a beer.
Yeah. Hey, fun side note about hops. So also while I was looking into North Coast, it turns out he goes to a beer convention and he finds this new hop being handed around and tries some beers that are made with this hop. And it's, you know, experimental hop number 5217, whatever it is, the way that they do that. And he goes, hey, I really like this hop. I think I'm going to pick this up and do a beer with it. So he picks up said hop, and he goes back to the brewery, and they make, I forgot the name of it now, is it Red Seal?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, Red Seal. North Coast Red Seal? Is that the name of it?
You're kidding me.
That's one of their beers.
Okay, so he goes back, and he makes that. Yeah, Red Seal. And he uses it in there, and it's an instant hit. People love it. They're like, this is a crazy good beer.
I get Red Seal on cask at Moon Sixpence all the time. It's incredible.
Well, we now know that hop as Centennial. Like, one of the more widely used.
One of the major C's.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, I thought that was pretty funny as well. But back to the void. So this is most definitely an Under Siege movie, and I like Under Siege movies. I think they build tension really well. And when I say that, I mean like The Strangers or, again, Prince of Darkness, where they're all locked in the church. Or Assault on Prince of Darkness. Yeah, all those same ones. So they have recreated that here and made an Under Siege movie, and it hits all the right notes of that. You've got a threat outside. You've got to have a different threat that now happens on the inside, so the inside is no longer safe. You've got to have that feeling of urgency, otherwise you just lock yourself in a house and be safe forever, you know? So you've got to have the urgency, and in this case, we do have that. You've got infighting of the characters who are locked in and betrayal between those characters. So, I mean, I think for what they were trying to do, they really, really nailed it on all fronts. And the acting is a little bit...
Yeah, I mean, there's some
all over the place.
The cast is a little bit, like you said, all over the place. There's some seasoned people in there for sure. And definitely some new ones. And you can kind of pick them out.
Totally.
But there's some, a couple of them apparently have worked together in the past under Romero.
Oh.
Kathleen Monroe, who plays Allison.
Oh, okay.
And Kenneth Walsh, who is the doctor.
Oh, he's so good.
Yeah, he's so good. That guy has a man, he goes back to like the 60s.
His voice,
just incredible.
Hearing
voice.
Him talk in this film is so awesome.
Well, he's done. Oh God, I mean, he's done the Three Musketeers. He's played D'Artagnan in the Three Musketeers TV movie. He was a character Brannigan in Crocodile Dundee 2. Hmm. He's done Ray Bradbury Theater.
Okay.
Yeah, he's done a ton. He has 223 movie credits.
Good grief.
Yeah.
All right. Well, and it shows because it he did stand out immediately amongst some of these folks. And I thought a lot of it, honestly, was just how awesome his voice was. I mean, mm-hmm. it's for the role that he plays in this, it was just so amazing. So I feel like we gotta tell people a little bit of what this movie is about. So what we have here is a cop. I would hazard a guess to say small town or at least backcountry cop. Yeah, he's not getting a lot of action. When we meet him, he's asleep in his patrol car on the side of the road. So that's the level of, of urgency to which his job demands. And he winds up finding somebody in distress, somebody who's been injured, somebody who's running from something, somebody who needs medical care. So he takes this person to the nearest hospital, which just so happens to have had a fire in it recently. And is being relocated. And they've got a skeleton crew, only a few people, which, by the way, I thought was such an awesome way to excuse one of the biggest flaws of movies, which is that you see these movies set in hospitals where there's a killer, whether it's, you know, Halloween 2, Exorcist 3, whatever it happens to be, and there's always empty hallways, no yeah. movement, lights are turned off down full portions and wings of the facility. But then you go to a hospital and you're like, no.
Not even close.
That's not how this is at all. Yeah. So I thought the idea that this hospital had just had a fire and there's only a few people there, you know, one doctor just because they're still open while they pack up their files mm-hmm. and move equipment.
And they did that pretty well too because it was in the beginning of it when he saw the kid on the road all messed up and he put him in the car and he's driving and he's talking to dispatch and he's like, I need a hospital. It's the nearest one. And they're like, oh, it's, you know, it's this where they're still open even because of the fire, they're still open, wrapping up some stuff. And he's like, fuck, I don't want to go to that one because that's where his ex-wife is. So he's like, well, where's the next one? And the next one's like, what did they say? Like 20 miles 20 away minutes, or yeah, 20 minutes like away or something like that. So he's like, it's your choice, man. And so that was like just a really cool, like, okay, yeah.
And he makes the choice to go ahead and suck it up and see the ex-wife to get this guy the help he needs. Right. But you can tell he's thinking about it. Like, maybe this guy will survive another 20 minutes. So he gets them to the hospital. They get inside. There's a couple people there already. We have a young pregnant girl who's there with her grandfather.
Maggie, I think her name is.
Okay.
Sounds right. I think
so. We have, you know, some guy there who's broken his leg or something and had a cast put on it, but he's laid up and you've got an intern
Kim is with that guy with a broken leg. Funny side note, the injured kid is watching a, show and it is Night of the Living Dead.
Yes. The original.
Mm-hmm. Which is, ties into the fact that these other two actors played in Survival of the Dead, I think is what it was.
Definitely. And so. Also plays into the fact that Night of the Living Dead winds up being kind of an under siege, in quotes there, film as well. Everyone winds up in that house trying to protect themselves from the zombie onslaught outside. So, no, I mean, this was made by some fans of the genre, and we're probably going to say that about a lot of movies, but I think in this case it really... It really shows.
It all takes place in this hospital that has a very good reason for it is what it is. In fact, interesting story. The hospital that's used in the film is actually a former high school.
Oh, okay.
And it's, I think it was Sir James Collegiate and Vocational School or something like that up in Ontario. And it apparently been closed for quite a while and was tagged for demolition. So they got in there, they did the filming, and not too long ago afterwards they... demolished it, which struck a little interesting chord with me because of this buddy that I keep talking about, Eric, his brother Matt, good friend of mine, moved to California to pursue acting. But while he was up here in Portland, he did a lot of indie films, and he got involved in an indie film called Flesh of My Flesh, which he was able to take the lead role and film at the old Damish.
Oh, yeah.
Or Damish.
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 Well, that's how I've heard it anyways. Yeah. I don't know. I didn't name it.
The old Damish State Hospital, before they destroyed it, which it was, I think, taken down in like 1995.
I'm not sure. Yeah, it was down when I got to Oregon.
Out there in Wilsonville, Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
Also happened to be where they filmed the hospital scenes for Ken Kesey's One Flew Over the Cuckoo Nest.
Huh.
So.
Awesome.
Yeah, just a little interesting personal history there.
That was very cool. It's interesting hearing that it was a high school, too, because when watching it, we see the hospital from the outside a lot. And one of the reasons is because that's where our threat is. So we're constantly getting a threat's eye view from out there. But I kept thinking, why is there this big, huge, open parking lot, like right in front of the emergency room doors? Like, it just, you know, normally those around to the side. And I kept thinking, like, wow, it's like right in the dead center. But that's probably the entrance to the high school. Yeah. And they just did it up as whatever.
Yeah, it's funny when you watch something and then you read, like, go the trivias or the goofs or things like that. Layers start peeling back. You start seeing the production part of things.
Totally. So they're in this hospital. We have one doctor on staff still, which is Dr. Powell.
Awesome voice, dude.
And he has history with our cop. What's our cop's name? Carter. Deputy Carter.
Daniel Carter.
Who, by the way, has so much Jeffrey Combs in him.
Yeah.
Jeffrey Combs from Reanimator, From Beyond, Castle Freak. I mean, just a
Herbert West.
Yeah. Great genre actor. And this guy that plays Deputy Carter, Aaron Poole, I swear is like the second coming.
I don't know, man. I fucking saw this guy and he was whiny and and I was like, dude, cop some balls. See what I did there?
I totally did.
And I was just like, what the hell?
I think that was planned, though. He does. You root for him to get his ass kicked through a lot of this movie.
Yeah. He's all like, well, first of all, I think the first 20 minutes of his film, of him, is all he's doing is going, fuck, whatever, fuck it.
Yes.
That's all he says.
Yeah.
And then when any threat comes up, he's like, whoa, hey, calm down, everybody. Calm down, calm down. I'm like, no, dude, get some balls. Do something.
Well, he's also suffering. So what we know about this guy is that his ex-wife, who is the one nurse, so we have one doctor, one nurse, and one intern. And actually, I think there's a second nurse.
Beverly, I believe.
Okay. One of the nurses is his ex-wife, and they have had a child who did not survive, who passed away young. And the emotional toll that took on them led to their eventual splitting and separating.
Which explains why he didn't want to go to that hospital.
Exactly. And which explains why he's parked on the side of the road, sleeping in his cruiser, and he's not too thrilled about anything, and why he, almost drove 20 extra minutes letting a guy suffer in his back seat to go to a different hospital. So I get the idea that some of his kind of sluggishness and his inability to really, like, stand up for himself, or his inability to take charge of this situation they soon find themselves in, is just because he's kind of given up. He's just...
Yeah, he can't cope with real life, let alone what's happening. Mm-hmm.
So when he's walking around saying, fuck it, fuck this, I think that's the attitude that he has found himself arriving at. And he doesn't have a huge... character journey in this film.
No.
But I think it's important for him to start that way to ultimately go where he goes.
And once you start getting his backstory, then you kind of get
for
it.
Sure.
But I was just...
But at the beginning point, you're just like, come dude, on. Man the fuck up.
Yeah.
So the reason he needs to man the fuck up is that soon we have two other folks that arrive at this hospital. They are dad and his son, who are hunting... the gentleman who was picked up by Deputy Carter. And by hunting, I literally mean that. They come wielding shotgun and weapons.
Shotguns blazing.
They are looking for this guy to kill him.
Yeah, actually the opening scene, that doesn't really explain anything, but it shows these two guys chasing people out of a house, shooting them, putting gasoline on them, and catching them on fire.
Brutal beginning.
Brutal beginning. Yeah. You're like, holy fuck, who are these two?
Mm-hmm.
And then you don't see him again until
now. So these guys storm the hospital and are pretty much intent on taking out anybody that stands between them and this guy that they're after. And these are the moments where I think Deputy Carter really kind of was at his most lacking, because he lets these guys walk all over him.
Oh, yeah. There's even, I think didn't we see the first development of the evil just before they got there? So he's already dealing with a big mind fuck. Isn't that when the second nurse
yes
actually starts cutting off her face?
Yeah, she has just murderized the patient, the guy that was in there. I think it was just broken leg or something. Yeah. She pushed a scalpel down through his eyeball into his brain.
Yeah.
Scissors.
Not even something as,
scissors,
precision as a scalpel.
I'm going to take these
crafting scissors and I'm going to make a dolly out of your eyeball.
And Deputy Carter comes across this just in time for her to turn towards him. And
decide her face was to not see hers that, to take
yeah,
it
she's
off.
Been removing her face with said scissors, yeah, and she continues.
Like, this isn't my face.
Awesome practical effects to just peel off pieces and snip off pieces of her face, which was, I don't know, I thought was pretty sweet.
Yeah.
When she makes a move towards him, however, he of course has to blast her. That I thought was going to kind of steer him down the road we were hoping.
Right. Doesn't he like have a moment, like, because he has to shoot her.
Yep.
And then he goes into the bathroom and he vomits, which, of course, a lot of people do.
Sure.
And cops. And
the
big trauma of killing somebody for the first time. You get sick. But doesn't he, like, then pass out or go into some sort of seizure?
And he has some visions.
Yeah, the doctor says that he had a seizure.
And these first visions are when we get our first inkling of the scope of this movie and what we're actually looking at. And it's also the first push of this Lovecraftian kind of elder god, expanded cosmos of terror,
right,
sort of things. And he is seeing just these amorphous shapes in this astral clouds and space that were awfully, awfully Cthulhu looking shapes. And, if you're at all familiar with any of Lovecraft's mythos and the elder gods and the beings that he kind of created in his universe and things, it just sells all of those things immediately.
Yeah.
And, dusty, arid planetary landscape, and of course the triangles.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie is all about
triangles,
that triangle.
Are huge.
Which again, I thought, well, we're going to have some meaning to this repetitive use of this triangle, but I think it's just because the triangle as a shape is so rooted in things that we think are ancient,
mm-hmm,
whether it be the pyramids or the pyramids in South America, even. Or things that we think of as mystical or esoteric, or the things that we think of as subversive, like Illuminati,
right,
and these secret societies and things like that. So I think just by that shape showing up and being used so prominently.
Triangles, especially in Catholic and Christian religion, triangles have three points, and therefore they're supposed to represent, or at least are often linked to, the different trinities as mm-hmm well. Of Christian faith, the Holy Trinity, the Son, the Holy Ghost, all that stuff. So this could even be, anti-Trinity, in a sense.
Very much so.
But yeah, it definitely has that.
Basically, something real big and real creepy, uh-huh, and real frightening is on its way when he starts having these visions.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't give anything away. They're very brief, just flashes of information. So that again shows the filmmakers doing such a great job, because we already are kind of along for the ride and we don't even know what we're looking at or whether our ride has taken us yet.
Yeah. And then, these two dudes bust in or kind of at this point.
Yeah. They
bust into the hospital,
rush in, and it's not locked up or anything at this point. Nobody knows things are going to get way more terrible.
They're all kind of recovering.
What the fuck phase.
Exactly. Yeah,
Beverly just cut her face off. What the fuck? And then
All
of a sudden, now what? Two dudes show up with guns.
Yep.
Wanting to kill the guy that the cop picked up on the side of the road. And they're like, oh, fuck. Hey, these must be the fuckers from the beginning. They're here to, murder and mayhem. And we don't know anything about them at this point.
Yeah.
But at some point, too, we get another character in.
State deputy. State police get called in because there's a murder,
right,
so somebody else has to show up.
Then the cop asked out in the bathroom, so.
That too. Yeah, and we're not really led to know how long he was out, but I
mean. Long enough for them to call the state police and for them to show up.
Yeah.
And so I feel like they're out in the boonies.
Some substantial amount of time. And that's the second time we get to see Deputy Carter kind of fold in on himself and not take charge, not have any kind of balls, basically, when this state cop shows up and basically berates him for handling everything so poorly and berates him for shooting this lady that was coming at him with scissors.
Yeah, he's sitting there trying to figure out what the fuck just happened, and the state trooper shows up and starts saying, man, your dad was a good cop, but you're a fucking embarrassment, you know?
Yeah, he didn't pull any punches.
No.
This guy let him have it. And honestly, even on my third watching last night, I was kind of like, this state cop is either the biggest asshole or this is just a little bit overwritten, and like they wrote this a little too harsh.
Yeah, but I still was not on Cop Daniel's side. I was just like, God damn it, dude,
no.
Stand up. And then he asks permission. Oh,
yeah.
Can I go call this in?
Only thing he wants to do is be the one that calls in. Ooh, I shot somebody. And this leads him to go back out to his cruiser because he needs to use the radio to call it in. So he exits the hospital, goes out to the cruiser, and finds
any
that,
reason to get away from the situation so he doesn't have to face it.
Yeah. No,
yeah.
That fits.
Yeah.
That fits.
That's a very good idea.
He's just running away from everything. He's running away from his ex-wife. He's running away from his responsibilities because he doesn't know how to function anymore because his whole world crumbled.
Yeah. So that's wants a little alone time out in the cruiser.
How did we not know that? That's what men do.
Since I'm a chick, I know what you do.
Yeah, the fucking shit figured out.
So he goes out there, and what, his radio doesn't work. Call's not going through.
Yeah,
call's
not going through.
Interference. But while he's out there, he does happen to glance up and see our little buddies. So this is where I think the pacing starts to pick up a little bit.
Shit gets
weird.
Motherfucking cult members.
It becomes a real siege movie. So he looks in the parking lot, and there's not a lot of them at this point.
I think
there's
only one right off that confronts
him.
Yeah.
But they multiply.
Yeah, and
yes,
it's a
they sure do.
Fucking triangle-faced kind of KKK outfit.
Which is a black triangle.
Just a black triangle over the face.
Yeah.
No eye holes, no
But it's got
no
the white
features.
Hood and everything. It's kind of like an occult Teletubby.
Sure, yeah.
You know?
it immediately sold as some kind of religious raiment, though. Like the way the sleeves were cut, the way it draped, the whole thing. I mean, whether those were set in a Robin Hood movie and they were going to be some, you know, mystic monks, or whether you set those in like some super far future space movie, they could be... What were the Imperial Guards? Actually kind of looked like that. The Imperial Guards in Star Wars with the red... That same kind of drapery.
Very iconic.
So I loved it. It immediately, you looked at that and you went, that's a cult member.
Yeah. Like, I wasn't quite sure what to see of it to or think of that yet, because it took me a little bit to dive into the whole triangle cult part of it upon hindsight and thinking about the triangle and the Trinity and all these other mystic sites to it. When I first saw it, I thought, what is this? Why is this there? This big triangular shape. It's like an episode of Sesame Street. You know, Sesame Street brought to you by the number 666 and the shape triangle. I was like, what the fuck?
I would have watched so much more Sesame Street,
right?
If that were true. But it's very effective. The design and the what am I trying to say? The costume design on those guys is just immediately sells it. It's like, is this ancient? You know, is this some weird esoteric order? Is that even a person under there?
And they do a really good job of not giving you those answers.
Totally.
You don't know what the cult's after. You don't know why they're there.
Yeah, why are they at this?
They just want to get away from them.
Yep.
And at first, you know, they were trying to figure out, you know, are they trying to get in? And then they finally kind of realize these guys aren't trying to get in. If they were trying to get in, it's not that hard.
Yeah.
It's a hospital.
Yeah. That was a great line, actually.
Then it was kind of that realization of they're not here to get in, they're here to keep us in.
Yeah.
But
because there's just these creeper guards, this cultish guard outside.
Yeah, because first there's only one.
Because you don't know what they're doing.
Yeah, there was just the one at first, and he actually cuts, because they have these knives, these really sweet-looking...
Yeah,
almost like Bowie knives or something.
Just a nice shaped.
Yeah, and he actually cuts the cop. He actually stabs at the cop or something, and so injures him. And then,
He takes him to the ground and sinks that thing into his chest.
Yeah.
And awesome slow-mo.
Yeah.
Not slow-mo like they slowed down the film. Just slow-mo just like he took his damn time to shove that knife. And it wasn't like, you know, it started as a struggle and they kind of tussled back and forth. And eventually he overpowered the cop and they went to the ground and he got him a little bit in the chest. And then there's always that thing where, you know, is it just because the cop is that strong that he's holding the knife back? But you kind of get the vibe on this one that, no, this guy's just pushing it in slow.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was awesome. I loved it.
And then he does get escape. He does get back into the hospital. And that's when you start seeing, as he's glancing back, oh, there's more cultists.
Now there's four.
And they're start forming.
Yeah, and then they go in and slam the door. And, oh, wait, now there's like nine.
Yeah.
Huh.
And they're just standing there.
Which is the creepiest thing. And again,
it's that unknown.
I can throw that straight back to Carpenter. One of my favorite scenes from the original Halloween, well, it's two scenes actually where kind of the same thing happens, is when Laurie is in the upstairs room and looks out down towards the laundry, the sheets blowing on the drying lines, and Michael Myers is just standing there looking at her.
Mm.
He's not threatening. You know, at this point, she has no idea who he is, why he's there, you know, what anything. Yeah. There's just a weird dude in a mask standing by your laundry looking at you, very aware that you're there and very aware that you know he's there. And that's so chilling. And then later, the same thing by the hedges on the sidewalk. He's just standing there watching them walk down the sidewalk, not hiding, not, you know. And that's terrifying. And it works really well in this, especially pitch black, huge open parking lot, and just these brash white.
Yeah, and they're so isolated. You get that vibe that they're, you know, they are in this small town. They're in this, they're out in the woods. They're not.
Definitely.
It's not like they can run to, you know, the next area.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was sold really well by how far the hospitals are apart. Mm-hmm. Also, how long it took to get one other cop to show up. Also, he's not even the same agency. So, you know that this guy's the only deputy in whatever little county he patrols. Yeah. So, yeah, they're in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, and that's why they're not in a hurry to do anything.
Yeah.
They are in a small town. Yeah. Nobody's ever seen anything like this before. They
sell the isolation really well.
Which also makes it that much weirder because, you know, if you're going to have some weird Heaven's Gate motherfucker standing out in your parking lot, why this hospital? Why did you come all the way out here into the middle of nowhere? Why? There's so many more questions than if this happened in, like, the middle of San Francisco where you're like, oh, some kooks got loose from the kook factory.
Yeah, and that's a perfect timing, too, because it's at this point where you're like, okay, where are they going with this film? So we've got a bunch of cultists, you know, surrounding the place. Is it because of the kid that the cop picked up? Are they coming back to do something? I mean, what? And then it takes a whole different thing. And then it's like, hey, guess what? We got another fucking layer that we're going to introduce here to you guys.
Yeah.
And that's when fucking shit explodes in the other room where Beverly's dead body is.
Yes. Which.
And then the thing comes into play.
Her dead body's changed. just a touch. Tad.
Just a touch.
She's real pretty.
Yeah.
And again, this is where we get an idea.
She's like a fine wine.
Practical effects wise, where we are now going. We've seen awesome stabs and you know, we saw the cool I cut my face off and things, but those are all still very based in reality horrors, and this monstrous thing just isn't.
Yeah, it's when the two dudes broke in, they wanted to kill this guy and they were able to I guess calm them down and take him and handcuff him into the room.
They handcuffed him to a bed.
Yeah, where Beverly's body was. So we kind of skipped that part, but they kind of calmed the situation down mm-hmm. for just a second. Turns out they handcuffed him to a bed of a fucking corpse that is now sprouting, you know, tentacles, true spider head from The Thing kind of style.
Totally The Thing.
Which, when I first saw that, I did not go, oh, are you kidding me? What a ripoff. I said, oh my God, I haven't fucking seen this since The Thing. How cool to see it again.
Right.
How cool to see it develop somewhere else.
And it was just as gross and just as weird and raw as The Thing.
Yeah, there's something about fucking spaghetti noodles flapping around in somebody's eye socket. It's just...
Well, and we don't do a lot of, I guess, what they call body horror these days, which was, you know, all the rage back then. I mean, you know, Society is like one of the biggest examples of body horror films that I can think of. But we don't do that twisted, misshapen, you know, kind of thing. I mean, The Fly was a more contemporary example of what I'm talking about. But everything nowadays has to be so scary for I don't know, reasons that just make you feel gross, you know? It's because it gets all rapey, or it gets real torture-y, or it gets, you know, just too...
Or it's a cheap scare, a trumpet suddenly sounds and somebody throws a cat in the screen.
Exactly.
You know, or so some stupid shit like
it's
that.
It's nice to see something that you're afraid of just because, oh shit, I should be fucking afraid of that thing. Mm-hmm. Because it's
that monster vibe.
6 feet long and her upside down head is sticking out of now a bulbous, bladderous body, and out of the holes in the head are these, whip-like... I'm going to be scared of that.
Cthulhu tentacle shit.
You put that in a comedy movie and I'm going to be like, what the fuck is that? And I'm going to run away. So... it is nice to see that come back when something that's just all hair and sores and bubbling gore
comes
shuffling at you.
And but it's not over the top.
No.
It's not so much gore that they're just doing gore to do gore. It's gross for effect, but it works.
Definitely.
Yeah, and then they have a battle with the thing too. It's not just like this whatever they lock up in the room. It actually starts coming out. And here's where I think they may missed, maybe it was an editing thing or something, but the screaming starts, they go in, they're like, what the fuck? And then they start kind of trying to figure out what to do. And the state trooper suddenly just gets pulled away. And it really seemed, I don't know if you guys caught that too, it seemed odd that there was a pacing or an editing thing there that was like off or something. Build up. He just all of a sudden the state trooper got hit by the creature, drug away, done.
Yeah. Well, and we see where he goes later, and you know where this thing has kind of drug him off to, and the thing does the same thing to the doctor. Our doctor actually winds up in a scuffle with some stuff going on because our junkie guy who got handcuffed and just narrowly escaped this big beast now just wants the hell out of here. But the two guys who have come to whack him aren't letting that happen, and the cop's not letting him out of his sight, and no one can go outside anyways because there's a bunch of cultists. And in all of this kind of mayhem and struggle, our doctor gets his throat cut.
Yeah.
And he's out of there. So we also see... him get sucked away.
This is again where the fucking cop is like, hey man, just calm down. Okay, whatever you want. It's okay. It's all cool. And I'm like, God damn it. When are you going to fucking step up? Last time I'm going to mention him, but that it just threw out this whole part of it.
And I agree. And I've actually heard that in a lot of people talking about this movie. And I've read that in some reviews of this film that people were just like, I want to punch this guy in the face.
I guess it evoked what it needed to.
And I honestly think that was some of it. The Babadook, another movie that has a character like that. That kid, her child in The Babadook, for a large portion of the movie-going audiences that went and saw that, all they could come out of that movie thinking was, I couldn't even watch that movie because I just wanted to fucking kill that kid.
I wanted to fucking shake and baby him.
Until you realize how important it was that he acted that way once that movie unravels and you kind of see its deeper layers. And then you realize, if he had just been a normal kid, that movie would not have worked in any way. Right. He needed to be something you wanted to throttle. And I don't necessarily think this guy, again, his character doesn't have, you know, exponential growth or anything like that. But he does go from being kind of worthless to making some decisions at the end of this film that kind of, I guess, are his, I don't know what I'm trying to say, his redemption. Where he does rise to the occasion.
He does. He makes tough calls.
So I think it was kind of, you know, now
I'm talking about.
I'm picking up what you're putting down there. And yes, I mean, even taking that into account, you see that when it really matters, he can man up and, I forgot all about that. I don't want to give that away, though. That's some good stuff.
I know. That's where, this is, again, one of those movies where I want to kind of tease you. I want to get you interested in it.
Yeah.
Tell you some of the stuff that you're going to expect and you're going to see, but not give it away because it does go. In my opinion, the first half of the movie it's entertaining. It's like, okay, I can follow along on this ride. And then as they hit into the middle and the last half, that's when it really started engaging me. And I actually really wanted to know what extra level or layer they were going to put onto this.
At about the 50-minute mark, and I think this film's right about an hour and a half, but at about 50 minutes, and I only remember this because it was such a shocking change all the times I've watched it that I look down at the clock and go, where is it exactly that this movie changes? It does change. And it goes from this fervent energy and this kind of nonstop issuance of new characters and new struggles and strifes that they're going to have with each other and all these conflicts, and it hits the brakes hard. And then it becomes... everyone's been established. We've seen what terrors lurk in this hospital. We need to talk about why. Mm-hmm. So it becomes very – and it doesn't delve too deep into exposition, but a lot of stuff is just handed out to you through dialogue means. But we start to uncover some of the secrets about what was going on in that house that we saw at the very beginning of this film,
yep.
How it ties into the people that are currently within this hospital. And how that ties in to the cultists who have shown up outside and what the end game of this is going to be. And we are basically told at about that 1 hour, 50, you know, right in there, we're told this is going to end one of these kind of ways. And then we just get to watch it unfold for that last half hour, which I think is super cool.
What I liked about it is that it also sort of really starts introducing you into what you might associate with sort of the Cthulhu mythos.
Yeah.
The old ones and the elder things and rebirth mm-hmm. and the discovery of continued life and things like that, which is really cool.
Which brings us back to our beer choice for this evening and the old Rasputin and the Never Say Die and his interest in the mystic and the occult and all of those other things, which is why I think this beer pairs so well.
Yeah, for sure. In fact, I was originally thinking, man, you know, one of the cool things about the podcast is picking beers that are going to match the movies. And there's a lot of beers out there that have really awesome names like Evil Dead Red, you know, that we could easily match with the mm-hmm. Evil Dead series. And certainly that's fun. And I enjoy doing that. But I thought to myself in this particular one, before we decided on Old Rasputin, which was a brilliant choice, that the essence of the movie had to do with old evil and real elder mystic properties. So I thought to myself, well, we really should probably look at an old ale or a dark ale or something like that. So I did. I was originally going to pick Old Stock Ale, which is from North Coast Brewing also. Mm-hmm. But then Old Rasputin just came out. But anyway, I brought one. And I thought maybe we could just have a
test tasting.
What? Drink more than one beer?
I know.
Continue drinking. So I got to tell you, I have let my old Rasputin warm up a little bit as we went on, and I made sure to kind of work through. You know, there's something to drinking beer the correct way.
There may be hope for you.
Yeah, it definitely developed. It got a lot smoother and creamier mm-hmm. on the mouthfeel. It lost the thinness that sometimes comes with a beer that's really, really cold. It feels like it just kind of slides across your tongue. You don't get any of the feel of it.
Yeah, and the heavy boozy beers can lose that too because of the coldness. So when you do let them warm up.
So yeah, a lot of velvety kind of richness came through as this went on. That espresso flavor really kind of took a back seat to almost like a baking chocolate, like a semi-sweet with some good bitter on there. A lot of development. I enjoyed that. So there you have it, everybody. Go ahead and don't be scared. Let it warm up.
Drink your beer so I can put more beer in it.
So yeah, so I just thought, you know, hey, I had this beer. Let's go ahead and try it. I've never actually had it before, but it just the essence of it being an old ale, we develop into this, the void into the movie of ancient and old dimensions and creatures and entities. So I thought, well, you know, let's go for the essence of the beer with the essence of the movie. But I haven't tasted it yet. This is the first one for me. So
the color is amazing. Yeah, it's a beautiful, rich caramel color. Mm-hmm.
Just a tint of red in there. It's got a really, really nice sandy head to it with some good bubbles, some good retention. It's about a quarter inch.
Boy, that has a really nice sweetness. There's almost like a creme brulee.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Taste going on here.
Yeah, one of my favorite old ales. I may have mentioned this before. I don't remember. Mm-hmm. Tingston's Old Peculiar.
Oh, yeah. Yes. I think maybe we've mentioned that.
You can't get it. Last time I checked, man, that was going to be when it's I heard old ale. Anymore. I was going to be like, motherfuckers, this is what we're going to do. I went to
Old London. Peculiar. Old Boy, Peculiar. That would have been a great. Yeah.
But yeah, it hasn't been imported to the States since 2014, I checked.
Okay.
Oh, I got some last year. I just drank it all and didn't give you any.
I'm totally fucking kidding. She almost had me.
I saw the disappointment slash anger slash heartbreak slash
murder.
Good friends were supposed to be better than this.
Oh, God, you had me for a second. I seriously...
I can have that, a poker face if I need.
That's my fucking favorite beer. I have gone to great lengths to get that beer before, and for you to say that you had it last year, because you have pulled out some fucking amazing finds.
Yeah.
I'm sneaky.
I know, and I believed you. Oh Jesus!
Grace has
Christ.
Some connections, and Grace has some knowledge, and Grace knows how to get the beers. We need.
I'm having a hot flash or something right now. I'm having a moment. Well, anyway, yeah, this was actually quite good. I enjoyed it.
So this is a North Coast. Our old Rasputin, of course, was North Coast. You talked about having Red Seal on cask over at the Horse Brass. So I think it's safe to say North Coast is getting some thumbs up positive vibes from us at this table right now.
I honestly didn't even know that this was North Coast until I looked at it just now. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Old Stock Ale, 2017.
It's very interesting. Yeah, I like it quite a bit.
12% volume. ABV.
12%.
12%.
Also would never guess.
Yeah.
That's where you get that sweetness. That's where you get that creme brulee.
There's like an egg creaminess kind of.
It's that super malty, boozy sweetness.
Uh-oh.
We need a dose of reality here because we're liking this too much.
Is it a lot like the other one?
See, it's too sweet. You tell us.
This is a whole different cosmos.
Yeah, this isn't something that I would drink, you know, regularly, but... I could use it
it's
after a good
correct.
I actually
I could use this after a good meal of bangers and mash or something.
Actually drink this regularly. This is
I gotta go for some bangers and mash.
Okay, here we go.
Oh, we got a face.
Oh.
Give us the nose.
A little bit of medicine flavor.
Medicine.
Yeah.
Oh, I can see that. Yeah.
Definitely cough syrup.
She's not digging it. What about the nose? What are you getting on the
We got NyQuil. 12% NyQuil.
No, I can get the medicinal.
Yeah.
Because you get that really sweet malt character.
Okay.
And then it leaves you with that kind of weird bitterness aftertaste.
There is a film to it, though. There's some kind of oil slick going on the back of my tongue.
It's sugar content.
Is that sugar?
So when the beers are this malty, and that's where, that's a lot of times where you're getting, that's where you're getting your alcohol content.
Yeah.
You get that, like, viscousy, sugary. So you even get that in, like, a lot of really big IPAs. Like, to me, Boneyard's Notorious has that same viscousy...
God, what a beer that is.
Almost, like, oil slick taste because it's so boozy. And the alcohol and the sugars just coat your tongue.
Yeah.
Well, that was been a nighttime sniffiness, snuffling, coughing, runny nose, Deanne dose of reality moment.
Dose of reality. There it is.
Who needs that?
I don't know. Normally, she tastes something or smells something and then hands my beer back. And I go, oh, God, yeah, you're right. Now I'm going to notice that forever. But I'm not.
See, I get the night.
That's her, and that's been her secret power, her superpower, is that she'll be like, you know,
hundreds. I cannot tell you hundreds of beers
Dirty
I've
diaper
had.
And old pine needle store too
and
long.
I and I slide it across the table. I say, hey. Try this. I really love this beer. And she smells and goes, oh, that's a moldy avocado in a sweaty gym sock. And I go, oh. And then I have a smell and I go, you know, it is.
Damn it.
A moldy. And I, you know, she hasn't turned me off of any beers per se, but she does have a remarkable way of changing the way I perceive them for a moment.
Sure. Yeah.
For sure.
So I think my favorite thing about this bottle is it has a Best Buy date of February of 2033.
Well, let's get some more of this.
Fucking apocalypse beer right
and
there, man.
We'll come back for a
that's when you know it's 10-year
podcast reunion. We're crossing our fingers here. And we'll crack a bottle of this open and see how it tastes.
Shit, yeah. So do we want to go any further into, like, unveiling the secrets of this film?
Honestly,
you can't give away all the shenanigans.
No.
Yeah.
One thing I think you do have to say is it does get very Lovecraftian. It does get elder gods, old gods. It does get, eternity. Undeath and the cosmos and these grand sweeping plot points, but it does all of that in this high school turned hospital in I think what they probably had maybe six, you know.
Oh yeah,
you've got the foyer, you've got the one operating room,
farmhouse, you know,
yeah,
that was it.
And so these filmmakers managed to take a lot of genre and stuff it in a really tiny amount of budget.
Well, and yeah, because it was crowdfunded, actually.
I heard that. Yeah, they got like $80,000 because people were so excited for this. Because people who are into Lovecraft want a Lovecraft movie that delivers Lovecraft. And Reanimator is a fantastic movie. And Jeffrey Combs, you know, is almost a, you know, a Lovecraftian actor at this point. He's been in so many tellings. But is it Lovecraft or is it just a comedy?
Here's the thing, man, about this movie.
A horror movie based on his...
It is a great movie that nods to the genre-setting films of the 80s. Mm-hmm. If this movie would have been an amazing 80s film.
Yeah.
If it came out in the 80s, it would be the thing that set the genres for us now.
Which is why I love its inclusion in today's horror world, for sure. Because we need that dose back of just fun filmmaking. But I think when people saw this coming and thought to themselves, this could be that Call of Cthulhu, this could be that Arkham, this could be that, you know, I don't know. I think Dagon was an awesome Lovecraft film based on Shadows Over Innsmouth and a couple of the other ones there. And they infused a lot of comedy, a lot of humor, a lot of things that lightened it up. And Lovecraft stuff is not handed to you light.
No, it's one of those... albatrosses that you just not sure if you can tackle. And if you do,
for sure,
it's sometimes career suicide.
So I think when people saw, hey, some guys want to make a kind of Lovecraftian cosmic terror tale and do it with the effects the way they wanted to and really take it seriously. I mean, if I had seen the crowdfunding when it was going on, I would have paid into it.
Yeah, well, especially coming from a couple of points. It was one that is, comes from a group of people that did, you know, Manborg and Father's Day, which were cheesy, gore, you know, and they said, no, we're going to do something serious. That it was crowdfunded, so it had a really low budget. Mm-hmm. But it also did, I think, like $55,000 on the opening weekend.
Yeah.
So not a bad turnaround for 3 days of their total investment.
Yeah.
So when you're dealing with those kind of hurdles, on top of tackling nod to old genres and Lovecraftian mythos, you had a lot of things stacked against you, and they delivered.
For sure.
They delivered.
They really, really did. And in this time where everything 80s is kind of making its resurgence, whether it's all the synth music or buddy films that we're seeing being remade, you know, or Chips or whatever it is, we're seeing all these things come back from the 80s. It's like, why not get some of the good stuff too?
Right, right. And, you know.
Although I love all that synth music.
80s were the best decade, plain and simple.
Yeah.
It even beats 1902.
And you've been to like a lot more decades than we have to even know that. So that's great.
I've been to a few, whatever. This fucker motherfucker is only like 4 years younger than me.
I know, right? I don't know. I think it's like
okay,
eight.
So I think it's like eight.
We have three varied ages sitting here at this table, which gives us three varied opinions on a lot of things. And I think that's going to be awesome.
Because I think we touch on this on the episode of That Which Shall Not Be Spoken.
Yes.
Grace was like one.
Should we mention that right now? Should we just pull that cat out of the bag and throw it out there?
Yeah.
Let's talk about it. So there was a episode one, as it were, which is now going to be called Episode Win, instead of one, that we threw together for this podcast, but we were a little nervous.
Yeah.
We pre-gamed a little hard.
We pre-gamed big time. I want to say to the tune of like four or five beers before we pressed record. And then we moved through another 3 years or so, four in the actual recording.
Well, shit-faced.
It was not.
We would like to talk about the movie a little bit.
It was a Well, I think we mentioned the movie once.
We came back to it occasionally.
We talked. There was a great conversation about like sharks.
We did Killer Clowns.
Plane crashes.
From outer space.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to go ahead and air this at some point,
we think. We should totally say, hey, guys.
It's kind of a fun throwback. But first, we're going to, you know, hopefully try to get a few episodes under our belt in which we perform a little better.
At least,
And then we'll surprise the world with that one. But, yeah, it was an interesting insight into who we were going to be as podcast folk, just forgetting to talk about the beer and the movie a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we drank
an awful lot.
we were a good beer.
Killer clowning around and pre-gaming in outer space.
I can tell.
I've been thinking about that one.
Waiting for that.
Did you write that down?
I actually did. I was like, man.
I got that, I think, Facebook messenger to me.
I think it was
when
like
we were discussing
killer
this,
clowning
that
around.
Oh, my hell.
And too much pre-gaming in outer space.
It was a learning experience. We learned a lot of things. And someday we'll throw that at all you people out there.
Yeah, that'll be a hoot.
Yeah, a hoot. That's what we're going to call it.
Yeah.
It's going to be a goddamn train wreck, but it'll be hilarious.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, keep your ears out for that. We will.
But, yeah, so Grace, by the how we got on this tangent, she's like, what, 1 year old when these movies came out that we were talking about? Like in the 80s?
Like the Killer Clowns?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think probably for a few of these movies. Yeah. Well, here, let's talk about North Coast Brewing. So they got going in what we said 88.
Yeah.
So
look
yeah,
at you.
One.
You were yeah.
So
and now she's an expert.
So Grace is about 1 year old then.
I made it for lost time with the amount of beer I drink. It's all good.
Totally. But I give this film my highest rating. I honestly believe this is going to come out of 2017 in my top one or two movies that I've seen. I actually just watched a horror movie the other day that blew my socks off, The Devil's Candy. You can check it out. It's on Netflix right now, and it's been making a lot of waves, and
just
a lot
Netflix
of people are looking at it.
That's a weird shit.
They are, and you know, I do the Shudder horror streaming, and I do all that kind of stuff, but Netflix is used to be, just 2 years ago, it was a place where you went to find those same movies that they used to put in the red box just to fill up space. And you were like, I don't want to watch any of this crap. If you haven't seen The Devil's Candy, I got to point you towards that one as well. But The Void is definitely going to be amongst my top two or three films of this last year, for sure.
You know, I enjoyed it. I hadn't seen it before, and that's a treat for me because I've seen a lot of movies. I might have mentioned this before. And originally, I didn't really much – I wasn't sure if I cared for this. I was like – not sure what it was trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
At first, I was like, wow, is it original? I'm not sure. But then I rewatched it, turned up the brightness a little bit because I love practical effects. Man, yeah. I will go fucking toe-to-toe with anybody that says CGI is better than practical effects any day of the week. And so being able to see – it's like, if I go to a haunted house, I don't want to go to a haunted house and be scared and see like – smoke and darkness. I want them to turn all the lights on, and then I want to spend 3 days just looking at what they built. You know, I love that shit. So the second time around, I really started to appreciate it. You said you'd never tell.
Well, I think a good analogy is that haunted house analogy. It's when you're walking in a haunted house and you step on that floor plate and that pressure trigger or the little sensor they have, and a pneumatic pump shoots a monster up from behind a bush, and you can hear the metal rigging clanks, and you see its, you know, badly kind of wired on arms shaking loosely. Yeah, you got startled.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got scared a little bit, and then you get to watch and hear the hiss as the pneumatic lets the air out and the shape goes back behind the bush to scare the next person, but you're still like, oh, okay, got me.
Yeah.
Cool, nice. Or that same bush rustles a little bit, and you look at it, but nothing happens, so you look away, and then a real-life actor pops out of the said bush and hollers at you and puts his hands in your face, follows you around the maze for a little while, and then comes back at the end when you didn't think you were going to see him again, and he scares you again. It's always better to be real. It just always is.
Yeah, and I turn the lights on, man. I want to see that stuff. They should do that. They should have a tour where you get to go in and you get to see what a haunted house looks like with the lights on. You see all the work, all the
that would be cool.
All the build. That'd be really cool. But yeah, walked away from The Void. Really appreciate it. Loved the second half, the second act, third act, second-ish, third act. Yeah, loved it.
Awesome. Well, we want to recommend that you guys go and check this one out. Same high ratings go for the Old Rasputin from North Coast. Just an amazing beer.
Yeah, and that old stock ale?
Pretty
surprising.
Yeah, wonderful.
Very good. North Coast is just kind of all around a really solid brewery. I don't think I've ever had anything from them that I was disappointed about. They stick to really classic styles and they execute them really well.
Well, if you guys have suggestions for us on a horror movie that you want us to talk about or a beer that you think would be a great pairing, if you guys have comments, whatever, hit us up. We would love to hear some feedback as this moves on, especially as we're getting started on this.
Oh yeah, challenge us. Say, hey, here's a beer I love. What movie would you watch with it?
Totally.
Yeah. That'd be cool.
Yeah, we're up for anything.
And, you know, we'll get a hold of you. We'll get back to you. You can find us at our website, which is dreadfrightandbrew.com. You can also find us on Facebook/dreadfrightandbrew. You can see what we're doing and follow us on Twitter as well. And on Twitter, we are at dreadfrightbrew. But check us out in one of those places. Be sure that you give us a rating. Give us a review, hit subscribe. That's going to really be what determines whether we wind up on those lists that tell everyone else that they should check us out and have
give
a listen
us
to us.
A sense of validation and worth. We all need that.
I'm not going to say no to that.
Damn it, you young whippersnapper.
So hunt us down in one of those places. You know, let us know what you think. Let us know what you would like to hear on future episodes or, you know, what you would like to never hear again, which is probably Lee talking about Old Peculiar.
God damn it. Old Peculiar, folks.
But until then, stay tuned, subscribe so that you find out when our next episode comes out, and we will talk to you guys
later.
Bacchus
curses you.
Bacchus can eat a bag of dicks.
Blue ha ha ha.